Thank you to Nigel for the welcome. Thank you to Richard and Byron Community College for hosting this. Thanks to ALA and everybody associated with ALA for actually getting the conference organised and getting us all here. It's fantastic to be here. I deliberately leaving sheds out of what I've got to say because people often tend these days to think too much about me and then they think about sheds. But I will mention them a little bit later. It's great to be in Byron Bay. Richard was provoking us and asking us to think about resilience and renewal and to think about how we relate to this place. I did check this story with a few friends before I actually retold this, but my first experience of Byron Bay was at the Byron Light, down at the lighthouse with the cane toads in really wet weather with some off-duty policemen smoking joints in 1972 as part of the Nimbin Festival. I was in a band called Mulgabill's Bicycle Band and we were living in a bus at that stage. For a couple of years actually, and we visited Byron and it was certainly interesting times. I did not inhale. And that's a lie. It's really good to be here, and it's a nice part of the world. It has a nice feel. I love the environment, and I like the feel of the place and the organisations and the messages that come from everything you do here. I'd like to what I'm doing is basically, and I'll just check this works. Basically, my argument today in the brief time I've got is there's a range of good arguments for adult learning, life-wide and lifelong, which is what ALA stands for. My second point is this is not new and we do have evidence. And in a globalised world where everything is accessible immediately, we're stupid not to learn from what other people are doing successfully in other nations and places. And I would argue that aside from a lot of the stuff I refer to is research which comes from England because we've got really good research data and although we're not the same, we've got a lot of similarities in terms of our cultural systems. But there's some really interesting solutions to what I see as some of the issues we're facing here which come not only from Scandinavia, which has got some of the best education stats in the world, but also from China and from Indigenous education. And I think we need to get better at linking lifelong and life-wide learning with well-being. I think this is a really important way to go. Not sure why it takes so long. I might just use these. I'm not going to spend ages defining lifelong learning, but I'd just like to note that there's a whole range of definitions and it does include people of all ages in learning in a variety of contexts. In some of the UK research, and I'm not going to take NIAIS on here because I greatly respect their work, but I think we have a different view of learning here in Australia. My view is that learning doesn't have to involve a degree of learning organisation and intention, particularly for people who I'll be talking about later. And I actually don't believe that learning is always best done by teaching. I say that as an educator. I think many of the people in the room will know what I'm talking about. This is learning in a whole range of other ways other than formalising it. And I think that's in some ways one of our strengths as a sector is the fact that we're talking about learning through the community. But the third point on here is that lifelong learning is increasingly constructed in Australia and most other countries around a skills agenda. And for me that's interesting, but it's also a concern. Life-wide learning is what we learn, not just about work, but about a whole range of other things. And I've just, these are my words, but I've just pulled some words out which are the things we learn about at any age, when we're 10 and when we're 50 and when we're 80. We're still learning about all these things. And I would argue that it's important that we have opportunities to develop our capabilities at any age. That really should be what learning is about. I've been struggling as a person researching in men's sheds to find a moral argument about why we have sheds. Because people say it should be about men and women, or it should be about young people, or it should be about everybody. I would argue, and I've found some, the best stuff I can find for me in terms of my arguments as an academic, is that is Sen's work on human capabilities. And Sen's arguments are that we should be able to mobilise people of all ages through creating free spaces for agency. Agency as in the ability of people to make a difference to their own lives, not necessarily about doing stuff for customers, clients, patients or students. And Sen's argument suggests that if we do this sort of stuff, we lead towards equal citizenship for all in the community of all ages who may feel disempowered. And that's the best thing I can find. I know there's an economic argument for adult education. When you actually look closely at the economic argument, and this is some research that comes recently out of NIAIS, it's a 2012 study where they looked at the dollar value of non-work related part-time adult education in the UK. It was a huge statistical study. What it suggests is that around 60% of the value, the dollar value of adult education is related to better social relationships. Some of the value, the dollar value, is about health. Some of the dollar value is about the greater likelihood that people will volunteer on a regular basis. And only around one-fifth of the dollar value was related to greater likelihood of finding or staying in a job. Now, I'm not suggesting we reduce everything to dollar value, but I am saying that sometimes the data can actually talk back to the neoliberal and economic rationalist argument. It's actually quite economically rational to have adult education if you look at it in this way. I think sometimes we forget that this stuff is not new. And I'll just put up, there was a certain person in the world who said we should allow all people to have adult education regardless of family background. And this same person said that people are similar to each other by nature at birth, however, exposed to diverse circumstances while growing up, they develop diverse habits. And separately, this person went on to say that we should basically take account of the learner in what we do rather than just constructing curriculum as if the learner doesn't exist. This person was actually theorising in around 550 BC, and his name was Confucius. Confucius had a really interesting life, and I'm not just talking about Confucius simply because I've recently been to China, but there's no accident, I don't think, that China and Scandinavia have survived the world economic crisis better than most other parts of the world, in part because they've got a very deep lifelong and life-wide learning culture. Confucius basically looked at his own life before, obviously before he died, and he looked at his own life and he said, this is more or less what happened to me. And I put it down here because I see parallels between Confucius and 2012 in Australia. And when we look closely at some research that's been done in the UK, They looked at what people actually need to learn at particular times in their life. For those of you who want copies of this, I've got enough copies, probably one between two, in a folder here, which I can give you straight away afterwards if you ask me. And I think we often forget that what we need to know is different at different times in our life. And that that when we're younger, we tend to be developing our education potential through schools, developing our social networks, and getting new knowledge and networks in order to really get set up. And we do this obviously through school and through vet. And as adults, we tend to look for and develop employment, but we also, importantly, look after our families, including their health and education. But later in life, and this is where some of the men shed stuff gets really interesting, the three main things that people want and need to know in later life, beyond work, is actually overcoming the risk of social isolation, staying healthy, and remaining independent. And these are things that our education system doesn't teach us to do. I would argue we've got a reasonably, I won't say reasonably good, I think it's actually pretty poor, but it's reasonable, we've got an education system that's designed to set people up for work, but it doesn't prepare people for context aside from work. And I actually think that's a really important thing that a lot of people find difficult in transition to retirement to do. The other thing, and I really like the idea that one of the important things that we should learn through life, and certainly before we die, is actually make sense of and reconcile the life we've lived before we die. So these are the sorts of things, and if you look at Confucius, I actually